would be remiss if we didn't start by expressing our thanks to the elders and to Tommy for the great work that this lecture does, and agreeing with that plaque that was given to Sister Sister Young on Sunday, just to give an idea, as we head into a lecture entitled Esteem Them Very Highly in Love, the ladies, the members of the congregation here, you're remembered. He mentioned we have two daughters. The first time we were here for the lectures, they were either 3 and 6 or 4 and 7. I don't remember the exact ages. But to the horror of their mother, they got so comfortable in the first few minutes here that they came out after the first series of lectures in the back without their shoes on, claiming they knew where the bathroom was and where the cookies are, and they had a best friend to prove it. We think about that, and this morning I want us to be a little different. Joey a while ago stayed well within a passage. We're going to stay even more within a passage. You can turn to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 12 and 13. We'll be down to the end of the lecture before we leave that passage. But as we begin to think about this passage and what it says, I want to lay some groundwork first for those of us that are elders and for those that are preachers also. We need to understand where we're at in the world today. Those of you that are here, and I'm glad both schools of preaching have been here, you need to study, you need to think, you need to concentrate, and you need to understand where we're at in this world. We live in a world that desires to ignore and abhors authority.
Yes.
Once in a while when I'm working on something and just need something in the background, I will turn on that crazy thing we call YouTube. And because I watched some trial at some point in the past just because it was an interesting topic, I now get all these things about people in law. I see these people that show up and they're described as sovereign citizens. Here are people that are willing to sit and tell a police officer on the side of the road, "You can't tell me what to do." That's how much we live in a society that begins to abhor authority. We live in a society that right now says, follow the science, and then immediately throws out all logic that applies to science. Think about this. A society in which one's opinion, if it's the one that is approved by those who, quote, quote, are public, is the one that is accepted. And if you say anything different, you offend them. And if you offended them, you deserve to be silenced, even though supposedly we have the freedom of speech in this country.
Right.
I guarantee you that what we're going to say today and what I'm going to say in just a moment will offend someone. Probably not in this audience, but it will. We live in a society where one can choose to identify themselves with some sort of pronouns, whether they apply or not. Understand, here is what I'm going to give you. I give you a choice of 3 different pronouns. You can be a he, him, a she, her, or an it. You can't be anything else. You cannot be a they, them. You are a singular entity. You are he, her. You are it. That is it. Some people will find that offensive. There are people who say, oh, gender is fluid. No, it is not. Science says it isn't. Follow the science, but I don't agree with it. So throw out all logic. Now you say, how does that fit with the passage we're going to look at today? It has to do with it because we also live in a society where we've stopped teaching how to read. We're going to have a reading lesson here in a few minutes. We're going to go back. For some of us, it's going to be going back to early childhood, and we've forgotten a lot of these terms. For some of us, you've never heard it because they don't teach some of it in school anymore. I could look at those that are younger and ask you, how many of you have ever diagrammed a sentence? We're going to see how important that thought is. I didn't put together the slides. I don't have all the references laid out here because I want us to concentrate on reading the passage. But I agree, the other night somebody said BDAG is their favorite. I agree. I love my copy of BDAG. We're going to reference some of the Greek. Well, we're going to spend most of our time in English. But we're going to go back and we're going to do it in a way that really is important. The passage, just so we get it to start with, says, "And we urge you, brethren, to recognize those who labor among you and are over you in the Lord and admonish you, and to esteem them very highly in love for their work's sake. Be at peace among yourselves." What do men say about this? Well, here is some things we can do first. We can say there is a general application, and while we can take a general lesson from the passage, and we ought to recognize and esteem all those who labor, and you say, why do you say that? I'm going to give you some examples in a moment. The first thing we truly ought to do is determine what general lesson may apply by determining what the passage says. But to give you an idea of why I think this is so important, let's look at what some will teach this passage that we just read applies. There are some, and this is notes from a sermon I heard preached on these very verses. Now, I'm going to give it in the way the sermon was presented that day in an outline form very quickly. In a sermon, it was taught that this passage applies to all those who labor. To recognize those who labor among you would include the elders, the deacons, the evangelists, the teachers. It would include those who minister through exhortation and giving and showing mercy, such as visiting the sick, they would say. It was those who use their talents to good deeds, such as Dorcas did. Those who keep up the facilities in which we meet to worship, cleaning the building, preparing the communion, pruning the yard, maintaining the baptistry, and other aspects of the building. Now, let me say, while I can agree, we need to acknowledge those. We need to thank all of that class of people. We need to uphold them. The question is that what the passage says? Go to another. Let's step away from a sermon we may have heard within the church. Let's step out to that we all love to do. Go grab a commentary. Commentaries, most of which are written by denominationalists. And let's think about what they say about it. Well, here is a denominational viewpoint of this passage that places the authority within one man, namely a person called a Christian minister, at least in one of them, or maybe the appointed and ordained office, a.k.a. the pastor, and not the biblical view of that word. As one denominational commentator opened his discussion about these two verses, he says the following: "Who they were is not mentioned." Who they were is not mentioned. Well, that allows him to go on with his discussion of the verses, to go on to say something in this line. Here is his quote: "They should seek to be personally acquainted with," notice the verbiage, "him, and make him their confidant and counselor in their spiritual troubles. They should seek his friendship and endeavor to maintain all proper contact with him. They should not regard him as a distant man or as a stranger among them. They should so far understand his circumstances as to know what is requisite to make him comfortable, and should be on such terms that they may readily and cheerfully furnish what he needs. And they are to know or regard him as their spiritual teacher and ruler, not to be strangers to the place where he preaches the word of life, and not to listen to his admonitions and reproofs of those of a stranger, but as those of a pastor and friend." Did you hear what he did? They're not clearly identified, but they're talking about him. Singular in nature. Another one says, in relation to these two, as you go reading the commentaries, it refers to persons then actually employed in the work of God. These were all admonishers, teachers, and instructors of the people, devoting their time and talents to this important work. Another one adds on to that. He says, those who labor are not necessarily official persons, elders, or as they are often called in the New Testament, bishops and deacons. They may have given themselves to the work without any election or ordination at all. We could look at many others, and we can acknowledge there's some good thoughts. But again, is this really what the passage says? We're going to go back to the passage and we're going to take it apart. And as I mentioned, yes, BDAG is my favorite also. And we're going to see some Greek, but we're going to stick to English. But I want to ask you, and as Christians, here is how we ought to approach this book. When it's time to read a passage and figure out what it says, get this book out and read it. Don't get any other book. You don't need it. You might get multiple translations of this if they're worthy of it. I use the New King James to preach from. I use the King James in the background. I use the American Standard. I use the ESV. I might get two or three of them out. Get a piece of paper, a pad of paper, and one of these lovely devices, a pen. And when you're sitting there reading, you start to make notes. And sometimes it goes like this. I began to look at the passage, verse 12. And we urge you. Other translations in this case say, and we beseech you, or we ask you. This is what I refer to as a polite imperative. Brother Forehand just laughed at him. Brother Forehand gave a great example of that the other night when he said his mama would say, Foy Glenn, I'll let you. And if he didn't get the hint, she'd say it again. I'll let you. Let me give an illustration most of us will understand. You're in that nice thing we call a car. You're driving down the road, and all of a sudden those lights come on behind you. You pull over to the side. You sit there and wait. He comes up, knocks on the window. You roll it down. He says, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is. I'm Trooper so-and-so. May I see your license, registration, and proof of insurance? You understand right here, sitting in this moment at this time, it ain't a request. It's a polite imperative. It is an absolute necessity, a requirement, and it is unavoidable that you give that license, that registration, and that proof of insurance. It is no less an absolute necessity, an absolute requirement, and unavoidable to listen to what God says here when, through inspiration to Paul, he gives a polite imperative. We ask you, brethren, the next word. What does that mean? Some would say, oh, well, that's so self-explanatory. Well, to be clear, Paul is talking to those who are Christians, specifically in the writing to those who are Christians in Thessalonica, where he had written the letter to. But by application, it's going to all Christians. We ask you, brethren, we ask you, Christians, God's giving us an imperative. The next part of the phrase, to recognize. And here is one where some translations will say to know. Or to respect. Now, you would not believe the number of commentators where, after reading this through about 10 times, I finally opened a commentary and started reading, who have a problem when they say that is to respect, because it creates what they say is a tautology between it and the start of verse 13. For those that don't remember what a tautology is, it is a needless repetition of an idea, especially in words or other than those of immediate context, without imparting additional force or clearness, as in a widow woman. Is there any need to say she's a woman if she is a widow? By definition, the word widow is a woman who has lost her husband. A widower is a man who has lost his husband. That's what they say. Oh, if you say that, it's to respect there. It's a tautology with that we're going to see in a minute, esteem. We're going to see that they miss the force, the change, the extra emphasis it's given. But as we go on, we see to recognize, to know, to respect. We find those who labor among you. Now, as we think back, we can see where that one sermon list offered could come up with it. We have all those who labor among us, those who are elders, those who are deacons, those who are teachers, those who cut the grass, those who keep the bathrooms clean. They all labor among us. Therefore, there it is. But here comes your reading lesson for today. You see, there's more to the passage. The next words are "and are." Here we find first a coordinating conjunction, that word "and." It joins two things of equal importance. And you say, okay, and there are some who teach it this way, by the way. So we have a second group of people. We have a group of people, those who labor among, and then we have this group who are over you, and then we have even a third group, "and admonish." But they're leaving out one word. "And are." Here comes some big English words. "Are" is a linking verb, a verb that connects a sentence's subject to a predicate adjective, a predicate noun, or a pronoun that provides information about the subject. Yes. Here is how we're used to seeing things done in English. The big red fire truck. And we understand that that word "big" modifies "truck." We understand that that word "red" modifies "truck." We understand that that word "fire" modifies "truck." This is doing the same thing, except it does it at the end of the sentence. If we did the diagramming, you say, "and are." "Are" points back to the subject. What is the subject? Those who labor among us. "Are" those who are over us. That "and" that "are" becomes so important when we see that next part of the phrase where it says, "over you in the Lord and admonish you." That first predicate adjective, that "over you in the Lord." Here's an adjective of that because of that linking verb that modifies that subject. When we put this clause together, though, looking at "and over you in the Lord and admonish you," here is something that, another coordinating conjunction, but the clause functions much like something like peanut butter and jelly. They're one. Like mac and cheese. They're one. They're over you in the Lord and admonish you. When you think about those meanings, consider the first of the phrases, going to the Greek for a moment to try to give a little deeper meaning. The first phrase is a word in Greek, proistemi, proistemi. It may mean those who rule you. It can mean to caution, advise, or counsel against, those who are concerned about you, or those who stand before you as protectors. You now are reading about those who labor among you, who may be those who rule over you, but they are concerned about you, and they stand before you as protectors. And they admonish. They caution, advise, or counsel against something, to reprove or to scold, especially in a mild and good-willed manner, to urge to a duty. That's the definitions of those words. We see what is described here. I want you to think as we close out verse 12 then for a moment. What does verse 12 say and to whom does it refer? Is it as we had some, as we saw their teachings earlier, who look at the form given here in the scripture as a generic reference to all those who labor among you? Or is it, as some would claim, a singular person, a Christian minister, the pastor? Or is it the case that as reading the Greek about this to see if it agreed with the English that I just went through, the lexicographer that I read in the Greek makes the following statement. He says, Paul is talking about one group of individuals in terms of three aspects of their activity. Absolutely, that's what he's doing. And to what group in the church, the audience to whom Paul is speaking, fits the description offered by this verse? when that one commentator I said, it doesn't tell us who they are. It tells you exactly who they are. Yes. They are those who labor among you, who stand to protect you, who want to offer what is best for you because they rule over you by God's decree. They are the elders. Now, going on to verse 13, what does the passage say? The first phrase in verse 13, and to esteem them. Now, in English, here is the word esteem. Esteem means to regard highly or favorably, regard with respect or admiration, respect, revere, honor. And there is, that I mentioned it earlier, those who say that to recognize, to know, to respect, that would be a tautology. Well, it would be if English was the only thing involved. You go look up the Greek here, and I'm not going to try to pronounce this word, but you look up the Greek, and the word that is translated to esteem means leading, governing, the leaders. And so the English falls a little bit short in giving us the meaning of what Paul is saying. Paul is saying that we need to be accepting of their leadership. When we say we esteem the elders, what we really need to be saying is, I'm going to follow their leadership. They are the leaders. That's the picture he gives us. But think about how much God says about that with the next phrase. Very highly. Here in Greek, it's a two-word phrase. The first word is a preposition, hupo. We get the word hyper from that. I want you to think about that word hyper for a moment. If we say someone is hyperactive, what do you immediately draw to mind with that word hyper? The second word, parisios, literally means in terms of quantity. How much do we follow the elders would be the answer to the question. It means super abundant. Think about when we read those words, esteem them, follow their leadership very highly. It means to follow their leadership hyper, super abundantly. God giving us a picture of how we're to esteem, how we're to follow the elders. Let me ask just at this point. How much respect, how much esteem, how much leadership do we attribute to the elders? Do we uphold our elders in a hyper, super abundant way? Or does this usually apply, and we're going to get into it more in the application, but let's ask some questions. Do we usually do it this way? The elders don't find out that you're unhappy with something that has happened at the church until 2 weeks after you've decided to go somewhere else because you weren't willing to go talk to the elders who are supposed to be your leaders. Do the elders not find out that you think there's something we ought to be doing because you don't think anybody would ever listen to you because you won't go talk to the elders? You see, when we take that kind of attitude, we definitely are not being hyper, superly, abundantly following them in the way that the scriptures talk about. That's the picture. Then we get to that next and last phrase, in love for their work's sake. Here is that all-important phrase, the central theme of our study. We get to that word agape. Joey a while ago mentioned we heard three and then we had a fourth added, and he said he added five, six, and seven. All those absolutely apply here. I want you to think about them. The actual definition I read, not to add number eight yet, we'll get to it in a moment. But the one I read said that agape is an attitude of appreciation and care for someone else or for an abstract concept, especially as resulting from a conscious evaluation and choice. I'm going to put that into words I can think of. It is an affectionate knowledge of what is best for another and the absolute willingness to do what is best for another. That's the words I'm going to put to it. There's number 8, I think, as we're keeping count. I want you to think of it, and you don't have to turn to this one. We're going to mention our first scripture outside 1 Thessalonians. For God so loved the world. Take that definition I just gave, that meaning I'm giving to the word. For God had an affectionate knowledge of what is best and was willing to do exactly that thing for the world, that is to send his son. When you take that and you now bring it down to God's leaders that are being given from him to lead his church, how do you do what is best for the elders? How do you love them? You see, if I apply that in an affectionate knowledge of what is best and a willingness to do what is best for the elders. Well, go to Hebrews 13, 17. We'll let God give us the answer. Through the inspired Hebrews writer, God said the following, obey those who rule over you. Who is that? That's the elders. And be submissive, for they watch out for your souls as those who must give account. Let them do so with joy and not with grief, for that would be unprofitable for you. When we go back and we think about what these verses are saying and where we ought to put the elders, we follow their leadership in a hyper, super abundant fashion because that is what is best for us. You see, by doing, it's the same thing that with God. Why do we follow what God says? Because what God says is what's best for me. The elders, remember I gave one of those definitions. When we see that rule over you or over you in the Lord, here is a phrase again that meant those who rule over you. Yes, they set those things within the specifications that God allows that we will do. Think about how unruly it would be if we did not have elders who could decide what time the services begin on Sunday. You ever thought about that? I'd like to get started at 8 in the morning because, you know, then I can get done, I can go home, and I can watch football on TV all afternoon long. Oh, you got some others. I'd rather be there at 1 o'clock because I like to sleep in on Sunday. It's my one day to myself. Well, you've got a misapprehension there. It's the Lord's day. Give it to him, and whatever you get, you get. But you see, we don't do that. We have elders who say, we're going to start at 9 or at 9:30 or whatever time is set because they rule over us in what God allows. Draw a limit to that. The Lord's table. I love Dr. Pepper. I grew up in Texas. Dr. Pepper's a national drink. It's not a problem. Can I put Dr. Pepper on the Lord's table? The elders don't have that authority. God said what will be used there. They don't have that authority. When does the Lord's Supper need to be taken? Do I have to take it at the 10 o'clock service on Sunday? Or can I wait to serve it just once a day if we decide to at 7 o'clock in the evening? The elders have the authority there. As long as they keep it on that day. You see, there are elders, it's been mentioned this week, there are elders who have failed to follow these commands and they do not rule over the flock they are leading correctly because they allow, and yes, I went to, when I was still in Texas, worked at AT&T, went to a fellow employee's wedding held at a Church of Christ on a Thursday evening, and what comes out in the middle of the wedding ceremony? The Lord's Supper. Yes, we have people that are not following, they're not ruling correctly, but we need to have those elders who rule over us, those who are concerned about you. Think about what I mentioned earlier, and as we begin to make the application here to what the verse says, If you're not willing to tell the elders when you're not happy about something, can they be concerned about you any longer? They have great concern. Trust me, it's there. But the problem is you're avoiding that leadership role they have. And they do it because they stand to protect you. There are those today who will say, "Oh, you can't tell me what to do." Elders, if we're going to be right and we're going to make it where Christians can fulfill what it says here in 1 Thessalonians 5:12 and 13, we better be standing up and telling them things that they need to hear to protect their souls. You cannot go out drinking on the weekend and be a Christian as God would have you. Your soul is in jeopardy if you do. You cannot go watch those movies and sing those songs that are so popular on the radio sometimes today without a jeopardy to your soul. They need to hear it. Unfortunately, what do we often do as elders? Well, people will be what people will be. That doesn't mean we don't need to stand up, tell them what they need to hear, because we're looking out for their souls.
Amen.
Love, that driving force in our relations. As we think about agape again, this idea of an affectionate knowledge of what is best and doing what is best no matter what. It's been mentioned, and to draw the picture and how elders ought to be applying it to the church and how the church ought to be applying it to the elders. God had a son. Do you think God wanted his son to have to be scourged? We've had it mentioned once this week. We often overlook these little words. Scourged. Here is a man who's stripped of his clothing and taken in either a tall beam is stood up and he's tied and stretched this way, or the beam is put at about waist high and he's bent over and tied to the ground. And then another man takes a whip that is embedded with glass and metal and begins to whip him such that it rips the skin off his back. He was not just beaten, he literally was bloodied. And then when he's done, they stand him up, they put a robe on him, that blood begins to coagulate in it as they begin to smack him about the head and spit on him and put that crown of thorns on him, and then they rip that off. That's what it meant to God to see his son and know what was going through. When we talk about an affectionate knowledge of what is best and then a willingness to do it. Think about what God did as the thing. We see that next word that's often overlooked, crucified. It just says they crucified him. And here's how we usually read that. Pilate had him scourged and then they crucified him. And we don't think about what that word scourge means, and we don't think about what crucified means. Brethren, do you think on the day that Jesus was taken, thinking about that term love for a moment, brought to that place of Golgotha, that those Roman soldiers said, "Well, here's the cross beam laid out nicely on the ground. Sir, if you just lay down here nicely, we'll give you a little bit of something, and then we're going to pin you to that beam, but we're going to do it in a nice and easy fashion." Or do you think, like they taught us when I was in the Marine Corps, and yes, I was a smart Marine, I was in electronic maintenance, but we still had to learn all the other stuff. When there was someone who was going to surrender as a prisoner of war, they didn't come up and we say, "Would you kindly lay down on the ground?" No, there was one Marine who took him to the ground, held him on that ground until he could be secured appropriately so that you were all safe. Why? Because we knew people like to take things like hand grenades and have them just below their clothing. And that if you walked up and treated them nicely and didn't do this, they might just blow up and kill you. You put him on the ground and you put where if there was going to be an explosion, he took it. Do you think those Roman soldiers were any different? Then when the time came, Jesus, the one who had been scourged, bloodied on the back, ripped off so that it re-bloodied, now had to carry that crossbeam out here. They threw him on the ground. They grabbed those nails. They drove them through his wrist. Then they took that cross and, oh yeah, they very gently stood it up. They didn't want it to bounce and cause him any discomfort or pain. Elders, do we have an affectionate knowledge and a willingness to do what is best for those we lead? Christians, do we have an affectionate knowledge and a willingness to do what is best for the elders? How do we apply love to this particular group? Yeah, we can look back. There are scriptures that teach that earlier list that we went through. 1 Peter 2:17, for example. Honor all people, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king. We could look to places like John 13, 34, and 35. We find that initial list. A new commandment I give you, that you love one another. As I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this will all men know that you are my disciples, if you have love one to another. But as the passage we've looked at ends, we need to understand there is a group that if we desire to lighten their load, that if we desire to love the way that God expects and asks us politely to do so, to be at peace among yourselves, that we need to follow Hebrews 13:17, obey those who have rule over you. Be submissive, for they watch out for your souls as those who must give account. Let them do so with joy and not with grief, for that is unprofitable for you. And we urge you, brethren, to recognize those who labor among you and are over you in the Lord and admonish you, and to esteem them very highly in love for their work's sake. Amen. Be at peace among yourselves.